Welcome everybody. This is one of our wonderful brief webinars. Tonight we're focusing on positive emotions in practice, how you can bring positive emotions into your sessions. And I'm going to introduce you to my expert guest in a minute. But before I do that, I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians on the lands of which we're all meeting tonight. I'm on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, as is my guest Mel. And I'm sure that all of you are aware of whose lands you are meeting with us on tonight. I'd like to pay my respects to the elders past, present and emerging, and welcome anyone who is here with us tonight to this session. What we're going to try and do tonight is help you to understand the importance of recognizing positive emotions in clinical sessions and help you feel more confident about using techniques to enhance positive emotions and bring them into the session. With me tonight, I've got Melanie Baburam, who works at Black Dog Institute as a clinical psychologist and in private practice in Sydney. Her special interests are chronic pain and trauma, and you might think that was not consistent with positive emotions, but Mel has ways of introducing those into her consultation. Welcome, Mel. We're very excited to hear what you have to say.
Thank you so much. It's so lovely to be here. And thank you, everybody, for being here as well. I know it's a bit of a weird thing to say, isn't it? Chronic pain and trauma, but it is possible to bring positive emotions in.
Yeah. Why do we need to think seriously about talking about positive emotions? Mel, is there some evidence to support the use of conversations about positive emotions within the therapy context?
Absolutely. I think definitely there's a few different reasons why I think it's important. Number one, our paradigm. Of course, our paradigm is very much focused to looking at psychopathology, negative emotion, what doesn't go so right. So I think it's a nice way to sort of bring in a balance to our discussions. If you want to take it even further on a nervous system perspective, it's kind of, you know, we do tend to pay a lot of attention. The body pays a lot of attention to fight, flight and freeze responses, adrenaline and cortisol. So it is important, I think, and this is so, you notice this in pain quite a bit, is to bring in the positive emotions, serotonin, oxytocin, dopamine, these kinds of substances that really balance out the nervous system for that perspective. And the other thing, Jan, as well, is that, you know, a lot of our clients come in and that's the goal, that's the outcome, is to feel better or to feel happier. And yet, you know, we often do that, use that as a kind of almost a bit of a throwaway statement without really some conceptualization or an idea as to what that looks like, what that feels like, what sort of theories we're drawing on to bring about the positive emotion. So it gives a bit of oomph, if you like, to a lot of client goals. I'm sure you hear that a lot. I want to feel better. I want to feel happier. But what does that actually mean? What does that actually look like? So bringing those elements in as well, I think, just again, I'll just reiterate, brings a bit of oomph to, you know, the goals that a lot of clients have. Yeah,
I'm totally with that concept that some people just don't know what they're aiming for, what feeling happy is going to feel like. So it's certainly worth having a conversation so that they know when they get there.
That's right. Yeah, very much so. Very much so. From my, you know, some trauma background, you know, some clients don't know what positive emotion looks like or feels like, you know, in their bodies. Some clients are mistrustful of experiencing positive emotion in case it flitters away and then what am I left with? And there are often sort of thinking styles as well that might get in the way of experiencing pleasant emotion as well, such as, you know, I've got to be prepared for a negative outcome. So I'm just going to sit and just think that everything's going to be negative because I need to be prepared for something bad happening. And in some cases like guilt, for instance, I'm sorry, grief, there's guilt around feeling pleasant emotions. I'm supposed to be grieving if I feel something positive, I feel like I've done something wrong. So,
that's certainly very common in people who are grieving, isn't it?
Very much so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing that I've noticed, and maybe this comes from my work in eating disorders, is that a lot of people don't have the vocabulary to express thoughts around positive emotions. Many people know when they're sad or miserable or depressed, but lots of people don't have the vocabulary of happiness.
Very much so. And I think sometimes happiness sometimes is often thought of as the only positive emotion to aim for. And you can see that, yeah, the seven basic human emotions there, this is based on Paul Ekman's work, of course, the famous emotion psychologist who was the advisor on the little cartoon that you've got there, Inside Out. He was the emotional psychological advisor for that movie. Happiness there is the only sort of positive emotion that's there according to his theories. However, what we know now is that happiness is not the only emotion one can feel. There's plenty of other variants. There's other, you know, feeling calm, for instance, feeling proud, feeling connected. What else can I think of? You know, courage, for instance, feeling brave. Yeah.
When you look at the list of basic human emotions, yeah, anger, sadness, disgust, fear, yep, surprise, and contempt, all those negative ones, that's the first six.
Yes.
They're all pretty straightforward, aren't they? They mean something clearly to everyone. Whereas happiness, the seventh one, the only positive one, although surprise might be considered positive.
It can go both ways.
Yep. Happiness has got so many different components. There are so many words that can mean happiness.
Definitely.
My list includes glee and jolliness and contentedness and gladness. I noticed that there's no calm and relaxation on my list, but that should be on the list too, shouldn't it?
All
of those experiences of, what did someone say earlier? Positive subjective well-being.
Yes, subjective well-being. I loved it. Yes, a great term.
So, yes. Happiness is a very complex thing, and we need to have to develop a complex vocabulary around it.
Very much so. Yeah, that encapsulates a lot more. And I think when you do that, you know, clients don't often think of feeling safe, for instance, as a positive emotion, or feeling proud, for instance, or curious. They don't often think of that as a positive emotion. And I suppose it's because, yeah, we are conditioned to look for happiness and joy all the time, every time. And positive emotion is a lot more varied than that.
It occurs to me to wonder too if we as practitioners need to expand our vocabulary of happy emotions.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yep. And even showing that in session as well. You see, I've got a very expressive face. So we do that in therapy. The words that we use, sharing our positive emotion. I feel inspired by what you've said. I feel connected, you know, to you now, you know, so words like that.
So if we use the positive words back to people, then that's a good way of modelling these expressions of positive emotion.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So how do we go about including them? They've just given us an excellent example of modelling the inclusion of positive emotions in therapy. Mm-hmm. What else can we do to help people tap into positive emotions while they're in our therapy room?
Definitely. So I think that idea of, you know, what have you done in the past that's helped to bring you, you know, to this space, recognizing then that them coming into this space is in and of itself, you know, looking for positive emotion and connectedness and help-seeking behavior is actually a positive thing as well. So what are some strengths that have helped you to get to this point? I do believe that clients do come in always with strengths, resiliences, and assets that we can definitely bring forward rather than always thinking in a psychopathological, you know, sort of way, but bringing in those strengths as well, what has gone well for them in the past. Also, can they recognize positive emotion? What are some, do you know what that feels like in your body? Can you recognize when you feel a pleasant emotion just as much as you feel the unpleasant, which is often what we hear as well. And the quote there comes from, the happy child mode that looks at, that comes from schema therapy. And that's very much about identifying positive emotion. So knowing, having a familiarity with how that feels like, if they're able to tap into that, of course, is always lovely to bring to the table.
What I'm hearing is a therapist who is listening for clues all the time, clues about somebody's strengths so that they can have that conversation where appropriate, and clues about positive emotions that they might be describing in one way or another during the course of their narrative.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. If I may say very briefly, Jan, you know, it was something that clients don't often realise as well. In pain management, for instance, it wasn't unusual to hear that clients could feel, you know, pain in one part of their body, but feel, you know, relaxed in another part of their body as well. So sometimes being able to just tap into that was a revelation for a lot of clients as well.
If I can tell my little clinical story, getting back to this comment about going back to the past for somebody, I've had a long relationship with one of my patients who was having very great difficulty tapping into past positive experiences, no memories of childhood, and could not remember any kind of positive experience. Yeah. Forget about happiness. That's too much of a big ask. Mm-hmm. But we finally decided that what she needed to do was go and ask people what she was like as a child. Yeah. And in doing so, her mother reminded her that she really, really loved being in the water when she was a child, something she'd totally forgotten about.
Right.
So she thought, I'll give this a go. And she started to go to the pool regularly. And after a number of years, she now gets in the pool or gets in the bath if ever she wants to create a positive emotion for herself.
That's exactly right. And that's a beautiful example of how bringing a happy child layer to something that CBT, for instance, would call pleasant event scheduling, bringing in that sort of happy child kind of layer really taps into these early joyous experiences and makes it something that a pleasant event, something that I want to do and I feel rather than something I have to do. Not anything against CBT, but there's a different element that comes to that when you bring in the things that you used to do as a child. It definitely brings back a more felt sense, if you like.
And again, I think there's a strong argument for getting away from happiness as being the thing you're looking for.
Yes.
What made you feel serene as a child? What made you feel?
Oh, I love that one. Yeah.
Nice word, isn't it? What made you feel, get a sense of accomplishment as a child? Or what made you want
excited?
To laugh out loud or feel excited? Yeah.
That's it.
Or feel connected with the people around you. That's an important one as well.
No, I love that one. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe we need to think about that when we're tempted to talk to people about happiness, but to talk to them about those sorts of concepts.
That's right.
Talk to us a little about the different approaches in the different therapeutic modalities, Melanie.
Certainly. So we've got cognitive behaviour therapy there and schema therapy. So cognitive behaviour therapy is a present-based form of psychotherapy that looks at what's going on right now. So there would be situations and triggers which elicits thought patterns associated with that. So it's a way of thinking about that that situation. Those two things lead to how we feel emotionally and also maybe how that's expressed in the body. And lastly, it also influences our behaviour as well. So the idea is that negative thinking brings about unpleasant emotion, which brings about, you know, self-defeating, you know, behaviours. And in terms of how we bring positive emotion into that framework, we'd be really looking at our pleasant event scheduling, so targeting the behaviours part of that formulation, which in essence would bring about more positive thinking and more positive emotions, more positive behaviours, more positive thinking. So there's a positive cycle that tends to come up. So pleasant event scheduling tends to be the primary focus in CBT for eliciting pleasant emotion.
Before you go on to schema therapy, I ask you, how do you go about introducing pleasant event scheduling? I once had an unpleasant experience. I came straight out of a DBT training and I copied off the list of pleasant events that comes in Marsha Linehan's handbook and gave it to somebody and said, have a look at this and see if there's anything in there that appeals to me. And she just threw it back to me and said, all these things just cost money or I hate doing them. So talk to me about how you introduced the idea of pleasant events scheduling to your patients.
Yeah, I think the idea is when I use it within a CBT model, pleasant event scheduling, I talk about it breaking a negative cycle, or, you know, in the case of depression, it would be breaking up a lethargy cycle by, you know, bringing about more positive behaviors that, you know, in theory sort of bring out the serotonin, the dopamine and all the good stuff. However, in some cases, clients, particularly if there's an attachment sort of situation, or maybe they didn't have a happy child mode or not familiar with experiencing positive emotion, can sometimes just look at the list as something else I need to do. Because there's no emotional connection with the list, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sometimes it's more that you need to have a long conversation with somebody about what they like doing and what gives them a sense of achievement.
Sense of joy.
Yeah. I sometimes say to people, hey, why don't we make some lists, things that make you feel joyful and things that make you feel accomplished, and pick one off each list every day and do one of those off each list. And sometimes cleaning the bathroom cabinet gives them joy and a sense of accomplishment, so they only have to do one of those things.
Anyway. You may even want to bump that up by saying, notice how it makes you feel and notice how your body feels when you feel positive. So you can bump it up with the somatic component as well if you wish. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Tell us a little bit about how schema therapy approaches this.
Yeah, thank you. Schema therapy is an offshoot of CBT, but tends to look at more of the attachment, emotional experiences in the past, usually related to this idea of unmet core emotional needs when negative schemas develop. However, in schema therapy, what we aim for there are two modes in terms of positive emotion. That's the healthy adult mode and the happy child mode. So those two modes, happy child definitely taps into what brings you joy. We're going to get to that in just a moment, and a nice typology to think about it that way. The healthy adult is the container of the positive emotion as well. So adds, you know, sort of boundaries if needed, ways of getting needs met and so forth. So we do challenge the negative schema. And if we tap into both the healthy adult and the happy child, the idea is that you bring about more positive schemas as well.
So let's have a look at these happy child modes. Yeah. Tell us something about each of these happy child modes as you use them, Mel.
Thank you, Jan. I'd be delighted to. This is a really lovely exercise to do with clients. This typology comes from Andrew Phipps' idea of play personalities in adulthood. It's a nice way to introduce happy child mode in adult-to-adult situations or sessions. So we've got the list there. So number one, the joker. So these are the types of things that bring you joy. So the joker, not to be confused by the movie The Joker, just need to make that point. The Joker is the kind of person that brings you joy through making jokes, laughter, writer's laughter, practical jokes, you know, someone who gets their sense of joy from engaging in activities like that. The explorer is the type of person where they get their sense of joy from exploring new things, new places, new people, new foods, new experiences. And it also includes new mental exploring as well, new theories. I'm a little bit like this. New experiences, new theories, new ways of doing things, new paradigms as well. The competitor is the kind of person who gets their sense of joy through competition, but not in a harsh sort of perfectionistic way, but more like personal bests, keeping score, those sorts of concepts. The kinesthete is the kind of person who gets a sense of joy through their bodies and being marveling at what their bodies can do. So things like yoga and dance and noticing how bodies can move and shift and getting a sense of joy from seeing their bodies move in that way. The director is someone who gets a sense of joy from creating events and organizing people, but then enjoys stepping back and watching the plan come together, watching the people, you know, come together as well. I've got a good friend who's like this. She's just pure director and she just loves getting the people together and watching the plan play out. So it's not about being bossy as such. The collector is someone who gets their sense of joy from collecting things, but also enjoys looking at their collections as well and eliciting, you know, these positive emotions through looking at their collections. So for instance, I had a client, and when I asked her that question, she identified herself as a collector, and shells, seashells, you know, were what she collected. And when she would look at these collections, it would bring back all these beautiful memories of all the beach trips that she used to take when she was younger. So it was really eliciting that emotion for her. The artist is someone who gets a sense of joy from making things. So really people like to get into their hands and like to do creative things. You know, there's lots of things at the moment, Jan, macrame and things like that, arts, crafts, paintings, ceramics, you know, those sorts of things, really getting their hands in there and creating something. And the last one, and I identify with this, is very me, the storyteller is someone who enjoys, you know, telling stories and learning things through stories, listening to stories as well, but also someone who enjoys getting lost in or consuming, you know, stories as well. Someone who gets lost in a book or lost in a movie and really takes that on board. Yeah, I'm very much that style, you probably tell. And the explorer is very me as well. So,
you know, I'm thinking a couple of things as you talk, Mel. First of all, I'm thinking, where do I fit into these categories? And I think I fit into several of these categories.
Nice. Yep.
Secondly, I'm thinking about all the well-meaning, well-being advice that we give to people, you know, join a choir, learn a craft, et cetera, et cetera. But we need to match what they choose to do with which happy child they are, don't we? They're not, as a kinesthete, going to enjoy sitting down and writing a poem,
exactly,
are they? So there's no point in us giving broad advice. We need to know, or they need to know, which kind of person they are before they know which kind of activity is going to make them happy.
That's right. And you get more oomph, you get more curiosity, actually, when you do it, as you know, when you take that stance. And, you know, many sessions I've had, you know, using these happy child sort of typologies, it's always a really lovely, fun session with lots of laughter and banter and back and forth. It's usually a lot of fun to do.
The Maria in the chat box has said, with the happy child mode, is the adult meant to identify themselves with one of those options as a child, that is in the past, or as an adult in the present? That's a really good question.
Thank you, Maria. That's a great question. What I tend to do with that is tend to get them to look at themselves as the child. So as the child, which one of these, you know, brings about the most joy? The reason why I tend to do that is because as a child, you know, we do things, these typologies, that just bring us pure joy. It's pure. There's no, I don't have the time. It's not socially desirable. You know, it's not tainted by any of that stuff. It's pure, I want to do it because I want to do it. So that's why I tend to go for, how they were as a child. Yeah.
Thanks, Mel. The other thing that comes to my mind is, when you're explaining this stuff to people, when you're exposing this stuff to people, do they tend to get what you're saying? I assume you explain it in the same sort of way you just explained it to us. Do you ever have difficulty with them not actually getting what you're saying?
I find that it's always met with a lot of curiosity, actually, not generally, because I think a lot of people like types and typologies, and it's kind of fun to know, where do I fit in? What type am I? But I always take it as, it's a curiosity is actually the main emotion, positive emotion that I notice with this exercise.
Everybody loves a magazine questionnaire, and that's what this is like, isn't it? It's like a questionnaire in a magazine that helps you know which drawer you fit in, and the next step is which partner you should hook up. No, that's taking it too far, Jan. But the idea I had earlier today, which I wonder if some people might like to explore, is the possibility of, when you're perhaps exposing people to these happy child modes, to use a visual example, a representation in terms of characters in literature or on the television or whatever, to explain what you mean by
a
joker, a kinesthete, a director, or whatever. Yeah.
Definitely. I love that idea, and I'm always up for popular culture and things like that. I think that's a great way to encapsulate these types. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I've got Deborah in the chat box being a devil's advocate and saying, but surely some people now hate what brought them joy as a child.
Oh,
that's tricky.
Oh, that is tricky.
I wonder what we would do about that. I'll have to have a little think about that. I'll let you have a think about it too, Mel.
Yeah, as we, I think I as, will.
As we talk about the healthy adult, we think that the happy child, connecting with the happy child, not necessarily having been a happy child, but connecting with the happy child will help us become healthier adults. Is there something to support that idea?
Yeah, I feel that definitely. I think identifying a happy child in terms of a healthy adult, the healthy adult makes room for the happy child and is the container, you know, for the happy child. And the happy child does have to do with curiosity, fun, play, laughter, colour, you know, things like animals comes up quite a bit for a lot of clients in terms of what the happy child sort of looks like. So I think the two work in conjunction, you know, sort of very well with the healthy adult being the container, for the happy child mode. So, yes, I do think the two are linked in that way.
Yeah. I'm reminded again of my patient who couldn't remember anything from her childhood, bad stuff or good stuff, who unquestionably became a much better adapted adult. It wasn't just a matter of recreating happy moments from her childhood. Mm-hmm. She began to remember the happy moments from her childhood by immersing herself in water and somehow filled out as an adult. It's difficult to explain, but
sounds like you unlocked something there, Jan, which is lovely.
Of course, there are more complex strategies that some of us can use. We've talked a lot about some simple strategies that are highly translatable into non-specialist environments, but there are more complex strategies like those used in EMDR. Mm-hmm. Tell us about how EMDR works in the context of positive emotions, Melanie.
Absolutely, yeah. So EMDR in and of itself, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing is a procedure to process trauma. However, the way that it incorporates positive emotion is actually before you do the processing of the trauma, and it's a way of it's RDI, resource development and installation. So basically, resource development are things that clients might need to develop before and strengthen and bring into their bodies before they start the processing of the trauma. So for instance, some clients may be fearful of doing EMDR processing. They may not have any resources for dealing with the flood of negative emotions that they fear will come to them through the processing of trauma. And they may be angry as well. And anger is also a barrier to experiencing this stuff. So what RDI is really about bringing about those positive resources. And the resources may look like things like, you know, courage or self-discipline. What other ones? Perseverance, honesty. So it's about bringing in those resources and actually installing them using bilateral stimulation into your body in a somatic way. So when I did the exercise.
So it's a way of making sure some people have got some positive stuff to start with before you expose them to the trauma and have them experience the negative stuff. So when you do the exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is the kind of thing you do, yeah?
That's it. Yes, exactly. So that's the exercise in its entirety. There, 10 steps. You would use like a tapping, so the butterfly tap in this case to install the positive emotion. You also notice there that there's a little bit of imagery as well that's involved to really fire up that neural network and introduce the resource or resources and then install them in the body with the tapping before formal EMDR takes place.
So what you're really doing is identifying a positive emotion through the conversation that you're having with people and making a physical connection, between a physical action or posture in order to call up that positive emotion when necessary. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Lovely. And I think that that will make a lot of sense to anybody who's done any somatic work.
Very much so.
It is interesting to know, which I didn't know before, that it is actually a part of EMDR as well.
Mm. Very much so. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Mel, for your wise words and for coming along to talk to us tonight. And thanks so much, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Good night, and thank you. All the best, everybody.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more of our podcasts, subscribe to and review Black Dog Institute on iTunes or your preferred podcasting platform. If you're interested in knowing more about our educational programs and research, please visit our website at blackdoginstitute.org.au.